This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Don Quixote, Volume 1 by Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra, translated by John Ormsby, Part 9, Chapter 25, recording by Bob Foster, Montreal, Canada, May 30, 2006. Chapter 25, which treats of the strange things that happened to the stout knight of La Mancha in the Sierra Morena, and of his imitation of the penance of Beltenebros. Don Quixote took leave of the goatherd, and once more mounting Rocinante, bade Sancho follow him, which he, having no ass, did very discontentedly. They proceeded slowly, making their way into the most rugged part of the mountain, Sancho all the while dying to have a talk with his master, and longing for him to begin, so that there should be no breach of the injunction laid upon him. But unable to keep silence so long, he said to him, "Señor Don Quixote, give me your worship's blessing and dismissal, for I'd like to go home at once to my wife and children, with whom I can at any rate talk and converse as much as I like. For to want me to go through these solitudes day and night and not speak to you when I have a mind is burying me alive. If luck would have it that animals spoke as they did in the days of Quixote, it would not be so bad, because I could talk to Rocinante about whatever came into my head, and so put up with my ill fortune. But it is a hard case, and not to be borne with patience, to go seeking adventures all one's life, and getting nothing but kicks and blanketings, brickbats, and punches, and with all this to have to sew up one's mouth without daring to say what is in one's heart, just as if one were dumb." "I understand thee, Sancho," replied Don Quixote. "Thou art dying to have the interdict I placed upon thy tongue removed. Consider it removed, and say what thou wilt while we are wandering in these mountains." "So be it," said Sancho. "Let me speak now, for God knows what will happen by and by, and to take advantage of the permit at once, I ask, what made your worship stand up so for that Queen Majimasa, or whatever her name is, or what did it matter whether that abbot was a friend of hers or not? For if your worship had let that pass, and you were not a judge in the matter, it is my belief the madman would have gone on with his story, and the blow of the stone and the kicks and more than half a dozen cuffs would have been escaped." "In faith, Sancho," answered Don Quixote, "if thou knewest, as I do, what an honorable and illustrious lady Queen Madasima was, I know thou wouldst say, I had great patience that I did not break in pieces the mouth that uttered such blasphemies, for a very great blasphemy it is to say or imagine that a queen has made free with a surgeon. The truth of the story is that that master Elizabeth, whom the madman mentioned, was a man of great prudence and sound judgment, and served as governor and physician to the queen. But to suppose that she was his mistress is nonsense, deserving very severe punishment. And as a proof that Cardenio did not know what he was saying, remember when he said he was out of his wits." "That is what I say," said Sancho. "There was no occasion for minding the words of a madman, for if good luck had not helped your worship, and he had sent that stone at your head instead of at your breast, a fine way we should have been in for standing up for my lady yonder. God confound her! And then would not Cardenio have gone free as a madman?" "Against men in their senses, or against madmen," said Don Quixote, "every knight-errant is bound to stand up for the honor of women, whoever they may be, much more for queens of such high degree and dignity as Queen Madasima, for whom I have a particular regard on account of her amiable qualities. For besides being extremely beautiful, she was very wise and very patient under her misfortunes, of which she had many, and the counsel and society of the master Elizabeth were a great help and support to her in enduring her afflictions with wisdom and resignation. Hence the ignorant and ill-disposed vulgar took occasion to say and think that she was his mistress. And they lie, I say it once more, and will lie 200 times more, all who think and say so. "I neither say nor think so," said Sancho. "Let them look to it. With their bread let them eat it. They have rendered account to God whether they misbehaved or not. I come from my vineyard. I know nothing. I am not fond of prying into other men's lives. He who buys and lies feels it in his purse. Moreover, naked was I born, naked I find myself, and I neither lose nor gain. But if they did, what is that to me? Many think there are flitches where there are no hooks, but who can put gates to the open plain? Moreover, they said of God..." "God bless me," said Don Quixote, "what a set of absurdities thou art stringing together. What has what we are talking about got to do with the proverbs thou art threading one after the other? For God's sake, hold thy tongue, Sancho, and henceforward keep to prodding thy ass, and don't meddle in what does not concern thee, and understand with all thy five senses that everything I have done, am doing, or shall do, is well founded on reason and in conformity with the rules of chivalry, for I understand them better than all the world that profess them." "Señor," replied Sancho, "it is a good rule of chivalry that we should go astray through these mountains without path or road, looking for a madman who, when he is found, will perhaps take a fancy to finish what he began, not his story, but your worship's head in my ribs, and end by breaking them altogether for us." "Peace, I say again, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "for let me tell thee it is not so much the desire of finding that madman that leads me into these regions as that which I have of performing among them an achievement wherewith I shall win eternal name and fame throughout the known world, and it shall be such that I shall thereby set the seal on all that can make a knight-errant perfect and famous."
"And is it very perilous, this achievement?"
"No," replied he of the rueful countenance, "though it may be in the dice that we may throw deuce, ace, instead of sixes, but all will depend on thy diligence."
"On my diligence?" said Sancho.
"Yes," said Don Quixote, "for if thou dost return soon from the place where I mean to send thee, my penance will be soon over, and my glory will soon begin. But as it is not right to keep thee any longer in suspense, waiting to see what comes of my words, I would have thee know, Sancho, that the famous Amadis of Gaul was one of the most perfect knights-errant. I am wrong to say he was one. He stood alone, the first, the only one, the lord of all that were in the world in his time. A fig for Dambilianus, and for all who say he equaled him in any respect, for my oath upon it, they are deceiving themselves. I say, too, that when a painter desires to become famous in his art, he endeavors to copy the originals of the rarest painters that he knows, and the same rule holds good for all the most important crafts and callings that serve to adorn a state. Thus must he who would be esteemed prudent and patient imitate Ulysses, in whose person and labors Homer presents to us a lively picture of prudence and patience, as Virgil too shows us in the person of Aeneas, the virtue of a pious son and the sagacity of a brave and skillful captain, not representing or describing them as they were, but as they ought to be, so as to leave the example of their virtues to posterity. In the same way, Amadis was the pole star, day star, son of valiant and devoted knights, whom all we who fight under the banner of love and chivalry are bound to imitate. This, then, being so, I consider, friend Sancho, that the knight-errant who shall imitate him most closely will come nearest to reaching the perfection of chivalry. Now, one of the instances in which this knight most conspicuously showed his prudence, worth, valor, endurance, fortitude, and love, was when he withdrew, rejected by the Lady Oriana, to do penance upon the Pena Pobre, changing his name into that of Beltimbros, a name assuredly significant and appropriate to the life which he had voluntarily adopted. So, as it is easier for me to imitate him in this than in cleaving giants asunder, cutting off serpents' heads, slaying dragons, routing armies, destroying fleets, and breaking enchantments, and as this place is so well suited for a similar purpose, I must not allow the opportunity to escape which now so conveniently offers me its forelock.
What is in it, reality, said Sancho, that your worship means to do in such an out-of-the-way place as this?
Have I not told thee, answered Don Quixote, that I mean to imitate Amadis here, playing the victim of despair, the madman, the maniac, so as at the same time to imitate the valiant Don Roland, when at the fountain he had evidence of the fair Angelica, having disgraced herself with Medoro, and through grief thereat went mad, and plucked up trees, troubled the waters of the clear springs, slew destroyed flocks, burned down huts, leveled houses, dragged mares after him, and perpetrated 100,000 other outrages worthy of everlasting renown and record. And though I have no intention of imitating Roland, or Orlando, or Rotolando, for he went by all these names, step by step, in all the mad things he did, said, and thought, I will make a rough copy, to the best of my power, of all that seems to me most essential. But perhaps I shall content myself with the simple imitation of Amadis, who, without giving way to any mischievous madness, but merely to tears and sorrow, gained as much fame as the most famous.
It seems to me, said Sancho, that the knights who behaved in this way had provocation and cause for those follies and penances. But what cause has your worship for going mad? What lady has rejected you, or what evidence have you found to prove that the lady Dulcinea del Toboso has been trifling with Moor or Christian?
There is the point, replied Don Quixote, and that is the beauty of this business of mine. No thanks to a knight-errant for going mad when he has cause. The thing is to turn crazy without any provocation, and let my lady know, if I do this in the dry, what I would do in the moist. Moreover, I have abundant cause in the long separation I have endured from my lady till death. Dulcinea del Toboso, for as thou didst hear that shepherd Ambrosio say the other day, in absence all ills are felt and feared, and so, friend Sancho, waste no time in advising me against so rare, so happy, and so unheard of an imitation. Mad I am, and mad I must be, until thou returnest with the answer to a letter that I mean to send by thee to my lady Dulcinea. And if it be such as my constancy deserves, my insanity and penance will come to an end. And if it be to the opposite effect, I shall become mad in earnest. And being so, I shall suffer no more. Thus, in whatever way she may answer, I shall escape from the struggle and affliction in which thou wilt leave me, enjoying in my senses the boon thou bearest me, or as a madman, not feeling the evil thou bringest me. But tell me, Sancho, hast thou got Mambrino's helmet safe? For I saw thee take it up from the ground when that ungrateful wretch tried to break it in pieces, but could not, but which the fineness of its temper may be seen. To which Sancho made answer, By the living God, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, I cannot endure or bear with patience some of the things that your worship says, and from them I begin to suspect that all you tell me about chivalry, and winning kingdoms and empires, and giving islands, and bestowing other rewards and dignities after the custom of knights-errant, must be all made up of wind and lies, and all pigments or figments, or whatever we may call them. For what would any one think that heard your worship calling a barber's basin Mambrino's helmet without ever seeing the mistake all this time, but that one who says and maintains such things must have his brains addled? I have the basin in my sack all dented, and I am taking it home to have it mended, to trim my beard in it, if, by God's grace, I am allowed to see my wife and children some day or other. "Look here, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "by him thou didst swear by just now, I swear thou hast the most limited understanding that any squire in the world has or ever had. It is possible that all this time thou hast been going about with me, thou hast never found out that all things belonging to knights errant seem to be illusions and nonsense and ravings, and to go always by contraries, and not because it really is so, but because there is always a swarm of enchanters in attendance upon us that change and alter everything with us, and turn things as they please, and according as they are disposed to aid or destroy us. Thus what seems to thee a barber's basin seems to me Mambrino's helmet, and to another it will seem something else. And rare foresight it was in this age who was on my side to make what is really and truly Mambrino's helmet seem a basin to everybody, for being held in such estimation as it is, all the world would pursue me to rob me of it. But when they see it, it is only a barber's basin. They do not take the trouble to obtain it, as was plainly shown by him who tried to break it and left it on the ground without taking it, for by my faith, had he known it, he would never have left it behind. Keep it safe, my friend, for just now I have no need of it. Indeed, I shall have to take off all this armor and remain as naked as I was born, if I have a mind to follow Roland rather than Amadis in my penance." Thus talking, they reached the foot of a high mountain which stood like an isolated peak among the others that surrounded it. Past its base there flowed a gentle brook. All around it spread a meadow so green and luxuriant that it was a delight to the eyes to look upon it, and forest trees in abundance and shrubs and flowers added to the charms of the spot. Upon this place the Knight of the Rueful Countenance fixed his choice for the performance of his penance, and as he beheld it exclaimed in a loud voice as though he were out of his senses, "This is the place, O ye heavens, that I select and choose for bewailing the misfortune in which ye yourselves have plunged me. This is the spot where the overflowings of mine eyes shall swell the waters of yon little brook, and my deep and endless sighs shall stir unceasingly the leaves of these mountain trees, in testimony and token of the pain my persecuted heart is suffering. O ye rural deities, whoever ye be that haunt this lone spot, give ear to the complaint of a wretched lover whom long absence and brooding jealousy have driven to bewail his fate among these wilds, and complain of the hard heart of that fair and ungrateful one, the end and limit of all human beauty. O ye wood nymphs and dryads that dwell in the thickets of the forest, so may the nimble wanton satyrs by whom ye are vainly wooed never disturb your sweet repose. Help me to lament my hard fate, or at least weary not at listening to it. O Dulcinea del Toboso, day of my night, glory of my pain, guide of my path, star of my fortune, so may heaven grant thee in full all thou seekest of it. Bethink thee of the place and condition to which absence from thee has brought me, and make that return in kindness that is due to my fidelity. O lonely trees that from this day forward shall bear me company in my solitude, give me some sign by the gentle movement of your boughs that my presence is not distasteful to you. O thou, my squire, pleasant companion in my prosperous and adverse fortunes, fix well in thy memory what thou shalt see me do here, so that thou mayest relate and report it to the sole cause of all." And so saying, he dismounted from Rocinante, and in an instant relieved him of saddle and bridle, and giving him a slap on the croup, said, "He gives thee freedom who is bereft of it himself. O steed, as excellent indeed as thou art, unfortunate in thy lot, begone where thou wilt, for thou bearest written on thy forehead that neither Astolfo's hippogriff nor the famed Frontino that cost Bradamante so dear could equal thee in speed." Seeing this, Sancho said, "Good luck to him who has saved us the trouble of stripping the pack-saddle off Dapple. By my faith he would not have gone without a slap on the croup, and something said in his praise, though if he were here I would not let any one strip him, for there would be no occasion, as he had nothing of the lover or victim of despair about him, inasmuch as his master, which I was, while it was God's pleasure, was nothing of the sort. And indeed, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, if my departure and your worship's madness are to come off in earnest, it will be as well to saddle Rocinante again in order that he may supply the want of Dapple, because it will save me time in going and returning, for if I go on foot, I don't know when I shall get there or when I shall get back, as I am, in truth, a bad walker." "I declare, Sancho," returned Don Quixote, "it shall be as thou wilt, for thy plan does not seem to me a bad one, and 3 days hence thou wilt depart, for I wish thee to observe in the meantime what I do and say for her sake, that thou mayest be able to tell it. But what more have I to see besides what I have seen?" said Sancho. "Much thou knowest about it," said Don Quixote. "I have now got to tear up my garments, to scatter about my armor, knock my head against these rocks, and more of the same sort of thing, which thou must witness." "For the love of God," said Sancho, "be careful, your worship, how you give yourself those knocks on the head, for you may come across such a rock, and in such a way that the very first may put an end to the whole contrivance of this penance, and I should think, if indeed knocks on the head seem necessary to you, and this business cannot be done without them, you might be content, as the whole thing is feigned and counterfeit and in joke, you might be content, I say, with giving them to yourself in the water, or against something soft like cotton, and leave it all to me, for I'll tell my lady that your worship knocked your head against a point of rock harder than a diamond." "I thank thee for thy good intentions, friend Sancho," answered Don Quixote, "but I would have thee know that all these things I am doing are not in joke, but very much in earnest, for anything else would be a transgression of the ordinances of chivalry, which forbid us to tell any lie whatever under the penalties due to apostasy, and to do one thing instead of another is just the same as lying, so my knocks on the head must be real, solid, and valid, without anything sophisticated or fanciful about them, and it will be needful to leave me some lint to dress my wounds, since fortune has compelled us to do without the balsam we lost." "It was worse losing the ass," replied Sancho, "for with him lint and all were lost, but I beg of your worship not to remind me again of that accursed liquor, for my soul, not to say my stomach, turns at hearing the very name of it, and I beg of you, too, to reckon as past the 3 days you allowed me for seeing the mad things you do, for I take them as seen already and pronounced upon. And I will tell wonderful stories to my lady, so write the letter and send me off at once, for I long to return and take your worship out of this purgatory where I am leaving you." "Purgatory, dost thou call it, Sancho?" said Don Quixote. "Rather call it hell, or even worse if there be anything worse." "For one who is in hell," said Sancho, "nulla est retentio, as I have heard say." "I do not understand what retentio means," says Don Quixote. "Retentio," answered Sancho, "means that whoever is in hell never comes nor can come out of it, which will be the opposite case with your worship, or my legs will be idle. That is, if I have spurs to enliven Rocinante, let me once get to El Toboso and into the presence of my lady Dulcinea, and I will tell her such things of the follies and madnesses, for it is all one, that your worship has done and is still doing, that I will manage to make her softer than a glove, though I find her harder than a cork tree, and with her sweet and honeyed answer, I will come back through the air like a witch, and take your worship out of this purgatory that seems to be hell, but is not, as there is hope of getting out of it. Which, as I have said, those in hell have not, and I believe your worship will not say anything to the contrary.
That is true, said he of the rueful countenance, but how shall we manage to write the letter?
And the ass-colt order, too, said Sancho.
All shall be included, said Don Quixote, and as there is no paper, it will be well done to write it on the leaves of trees, as the ancients did, or on tablets of wax, though that would be as hard to find just now as paper. But it has just occurred to me how it may be conveniently and even more than conveniently written, and that is in the notebook that belonged to Cardenio, and thou wilt take care to have it copied on paper, in a good hand, as the first village thou comest to, where there is a schoolmaster, or if not, any sacristan will copy it. But see thou give it not to any notary to copy, for they write a law, hand, that Satan could not make out.
But what is to be done about the signature? Said Sancho.
The letters of Amadis were never signed, said Don Quixote.
That is all very well, said Sancho, but the order must needs be signed, and if it is copied they will say the signature is false, and I shall be left without ass-colts.
The order shall go signed in the same book, said Don Quixote, and on seeing it my niece will make no difficulty about obeying it. As to the love-letter thou canst put by way of signature, yours till death, the Knight of the Rueful Countenance.
And it will be no great matter if it is in some other person's hand, for as well as I recollect Dulcinea can neither read nor write, nor in the whole course of her life has she seen handwriting or letter of mine, for my love and hers have been always platonic, not going beyond a modest look, and even that so seldom that I can safely swear I have not seen her 4 times in all these 12 years. I have been loving her more than the light of these eyes that the earth will one day devour, and perhaps even of those 4 times she has not once perceived that I was looking at her, such as the retirement and seclusion in which her father Lorenzo Corchuelo and her mother Aldonza Nogales have brought her up.
So, said Sancho, Lorenzo Corchuelo's daughter is the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, otherwise called Aldonza Lorenzo?
She it is, said Don Quixote, and she it is that is worthy to be lady of the whole universe.
I know her well, said Sancho, and let me tell you, she can fling a crowbar as well as the lustiest lad in all the town. Give her of all good, but she is a brave lass, and a right and stout one, and fit to be helpmate to any knight-errant that is or is to be, who may make her his lady, the whoreson wench. What sting she has, and what a voice! I can tell you one day she posted herself on the top of the belfry of the village to call some laborers of theirs that were in a ploughed field of her father's, and though they were better than half a league off, they heard her as well as if they were at the foot of the tower. And the best of her is that she is not a bit prudish, for she has plenty of affability, and jokes with everybody, and has a grin and a jest for everything. So, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, I say you not only may and ought to do mad freaks for her sake, but you have a good right to give way to despair and hang yourself. And no one knows of it, but will say you did well, though the devil should take you. And I wish I were on my road already, simply to see her, for it is many a day since I saw her, and she must be altered by this time, for going about the fields always, and the sun and the air spoil women's looks greatly. But I must own the truth to your worship. Señor Don Quixote, until now I have been under a great mistake, for I believed truly and honestly that the Lady Dulcinea must be some princess your worship was in love with, or some person great enough to deserve the rich presents you have sent her, such as the Biscayan and the galley slaves, and many more, no doubt, for your worship must have won many victories in the time when I was not yet your squire. But all things considered, what good can it do the Lady Aldonza Lorenzo, I mean the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, to have the vanquished your worship sends or will send coming to her and going down on their knees before her, because maybe when they came she be hackling flax or threshing on the threshing floor, and they'd be ashamed to see her, and she'd laugh or resent the present.
End of part 9, chapter 25, part 1.